Okay, hello everyone. So today is Shushan Purim, which is the Purim that was celebrated a second day in the walled cities because the Jews in Shushan, in the capital city, didn't rest until the following day because they took one more day to defend themselves. So they didn't rest until the following day. So we celebrate all the cities that were walled in the times of Joshua are now celebrate a day later Purim than everyone else. So today is still quasi Purim, and therefore we'll still give a small idea about Purim. And I want to approach this what my Rebbe always approached, a very interesting question that you might not think about at first glance. If you think about the story of Purim, and it really starts at the very, very beginning. Esther chapter 1 starts. It happened in the days of Ahasuerus. He is Ahasuerus. So it's a little strange. You could clearly skip those words over and nothing would be different. It happened in the days of Ahasuerus. Who reigned over? It doesn't change anything in the text to say he is Ahasuerus. It seems a little bit redundant, kind of like we're just repeating ourselves for no reason. That's question number one. Question number two. So it says he reigned over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. And in those days, like the sitting of King Ahasuerus, who sat on the royal throne in Shushan, the capital city. That's verse 2. Now we have two questions in the following. The first is, why is it like the sitting of King Ahasuerus? Shouldn't it say, the sitting of Ahasuerus? What does it mean, like the sitting? It doesn't really make any sense to say it's like the sitting. What does it mean? I'm like the sitting in this chair. What does that mean? I'm sitting in this chair. It's either he was sitting on the throne or he wasn't sitting on the throne. It doesn't mean it's like he was sitting on the throne. And the third question that we're going to ask, or the third of the, before we get to the overarching question, is at the very end of the verse, we call it Shushan, the capital city. And there's only one other city that in all of Jewish texts that we really call capital city, and that is Jerusalem. There is no place that any other capital city is mentioned that is also followed by the adjective capital city. So we mention many other capital cities in the rest of Jewish text, and never once is it ever called capital city, except in the story of Esther, where Shushan, this capital city of the Persian Empire, is called the capital city. And the fourth overarching real problem is, we're going to go through it in a second, or let's go through it now, and then we'll ask the overarching question. So they're sitting. So it's like the sitting of King Ahasuerus. In the third year of his reign, he invites all of his officers of the entire 127 provinces to a party for 180 days. Now, please, someone do the math. How many months is 180 days? 6 months. That is 6 months of nonstop partying and drinking. Now, I'm sure that you've seen many people who can't handle the liquor over one night. Imagine 180 days and nights straight of absolute partying. There is absolutely no one running this Persian Empire at the time, because all the nobles and officers and governors are all at this party for 180 days. And he's showing off all his riches. And at the end of that 180-day period, he spends another 7 days just for the officers inside Shushan, inside the capital city, in the garden of the palace. And everyone was invited. The entire city, really, of Shushan. And he's showing off his entire tapestries and all these colors and all of his riches. Wine was served to everyone as much as they wanted. And there were no restrictions, and everyone had whatever they wanted. And then Queen Vashti comes on the scene, the queen at the time, and she throws a party in the king's palace, or in the palace itself. So we'll pause here just to give some context to the story. Queen Vashti is royalty. She is the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylonia. She inherited this empire when Persia and Media joined together. She's the real queen, and King Ahasuerus married into the royal family. He now wants to basically assert power and make everyone forget that she's really in charge, and he wants people to think that he's really in charge. So what's the best way to do that is just get everyone completely rip-roaring drunk for 187 days straight. So that is what he attempts to do. And in one fell swoop, on the seventh day, on the very last day of partying, the queen Vashti does undermine his entire plan by making a party inside the palace itself, and basically undermining Ahasuerus's entire plan. So what does he do? He consults with, he tells his advisors, bring her before me to wearing the crown. Many people say it was just the crown and nothing else, but to show off her beauty. She didn't want to come, and therefore, he asks his advisors, hey, what should I do? And his advisors, instead of, especially this one guy, Memuchan, he says, instead of advising him, well, don't worry, no one really heard about it. There's no one really here. No one really knows that you're not really going to be here. He goes off the deep end and he says, well, everyone's going to hear about this. So, and everyone is going to undermine everyone's power in their own households. So you should make sure to deal with this issue. And he doesn't really, and Ahasuerus says, wow, that's a great idea. Instead of doing what's sensible and saying, okay, no one heard about it, we'll keep it on the hush-hush, he instead decides to make a big deal of it and listen to the terrible advice of Memuchan. And then Vashti is deposed, and then he writes about it and sends it out to every single person. So it's a really strange story, a really crazy story, and very interesting, in fact. But the reality of this story is that all of chapter one is basically Persian politics. So the question is why are we reading or learning about Persian politics? It has nothing to do, absolutely nothing, with the Jewish story, which starts in chapter 2, where we first get introduced to Mordechai. We don't even hear about Mordechai. We don't even hear about Esther in chapter 1. So our big overarching question is, what is chapter 1 serving? What is it doing?
I'd like to answer it with the following answer, which will answer all of our previous questions as well. Chapter 1, what it's really serving is a couple of purposes. The first is, I guess more obvious, is as context for the entire Purim story. To understand Persia and at the time, and to understand how someone like Haman could rise to power, you really have to understand Persian politics. So why was he so easily being able to rise to power? The answer is because King Ahasuerus wanted his power so badly that he was so worried about giving it up that as soon as someone was like, oh, can I do this? Haman was like, you can get all the credit. I'll just do things behind the scene. The king was very happy with that. The king was like, okay, I get to stay in power. I get to do this. You're going to do everything for me? Sure, great. As long as people know that I am the king, that is all that matters. So that's number one. And number two, it serves to show us why in verse 1 and 2 we had these weird wordings. Verse 1, he is Ahasuerus. What does that mean? One, it means it's all about him. He's so concerned, he's so egotistical, that he's only worrying, really, it's only about him. I need to make sure that I'm self-served. But number two, what does it mean, kisheves, like the sitting? It means he wasn't really, it's not really his throne. He's King Charles, right? King Charles isn't really, right, Charles? No, that's the one now. King Philip, he wasn't really the king. Really, it was Queen Elizabeth, not Victoria. I know British royalty really well. I'm clearly much better with Shushan politics than British politics. Right, so Prince Philip's is not really the king. He just married in. Imagine after she died that he just tried getting everyone drunk for 180 days and tried to just overtake the throne. It wouldn't be really that he's sitting. It's like he's sitting because it's not really his throne to sit on. It really should be King Charles, who's now the king, which is why he's now the king and not Prince. Oh, he died before? Oh, okay. So, but if he would have, okay. Maybe, okay, whatever. But you understand, everyone understands, right? We're all on the same page? Yes? Okay, good. So that's in that case. And
it's interesting that if you listen to the way that the Megillah is read, it's read in a very happy tone the entire time, except for that there's one verse that we read in a very derivative tone, that it's the same tone that we use on Tisha B'Av, which is recounting the story of the destruction of the temple. And it's basically the words that recount that they ate on different dishes. That's how their words translate, different dishes. And the commentators like to say that King Ahasuerus, actually 70 years after the destruction of the temple, did the math and said, well, the prophet said that the Jews were going to be redeemed after 70 years. The Jews are not redeemed after 70 years. Happy days, there's no redemption. So therefore, we are going to use the vessels from the temple to make a party out of. The problem is that the text doesn't indicate that at all. So what the text does indicate, however, that everything was done according to everyone's religion. Meaning that if you needed kosher food because you were Jewish, Ahasuerus was very good to the Jews. If you needed kosher food, he serves kosher food at the party. You need satmar shchita, he gave you satmar shchita. You need vegetarian food, he gave you vegetarian food. You wanted strict halal food, he gave you strict halal food. You needed...
Halal didn't exist then.
Okay, it didn't exist. But hey, let's say it did. You needed whatever Persian needed. Gluten-free? You had gluten-free food. If you needed gluten-free, vegan, non-GMO organic food, he provided it. Because that's what Ahasuerus did. He made sure that everyone had exactly what they wanted. So what the text actually serves is, when you look at, and our third question was, why is it that this is the only capital city called the capital city besides Jerusalem? The problem was, is that it's as if the Jews were eating off temple vessels, because when you forget about what is the true capital city, it's as if you've rejected the temple, and it's just as blasphemous as if you were eating off temple vessels itself. So when they forgot about Jerusalem and they're starting to call another capital the capital city, and they're, again, like we said, there's no other text in Jewish text that calls capital city besides here and Jerusalem. So when you're starting to call Shushan the capital city, it's as blasphemous as if you forgot about the temple. So, what? This is 70 years after. We're in between the destruction of the two temples. So we're now 70 years after the destruction of first temple, which prophets prophesied that there would only be 70 years and miscounting. So that's kind of where we are. So now our final question, which was, why do we have this politics of Shushan? Why is it included if it's not part of the Jewish story? So the one part was because we need to know the context. But there's plenty of stories where we don't really know the context, and you kind of just jump right in. Maybe I can't say the context proceedings in Congress. What are our other options? Our other options are as follows. Number one, if you look through the Megillah text, and I encourage you guys to do it with this new lens, is the story of Esther is obviously the Jewish story, but a lot of it is really making fun of King Ahasuerus. It's really a story about how foolish this king is, because he is so willing to accept anybody's advice, right? He takes this guy Mumukhan's advice, that's like the stupidest advice. Like, tell everyone about what happened and make sure everyone knows that you have to do this. You could have just kept it quiet and you could have avoided the entire story. But instead, he took this advice, and he took it multiple times, of this guy who we think, again, is Haman, according to many people, that he took this guy's advice multiple times. So number one, it's making fun of Ahasuerus. Number two, bless you, is it's also coming, chapter one, to serve as a cautionary tale about politics in general. Is there's a verse in Mishlei, in Proverbs, that says, my mind just totally blanked. Yad Melachim, the hands of kings, or the minds of kings, is really in the hands of God. So it's really great to know that Esther was in the place of the palace and she had a hand in the saving. But in reality, right, the holiday is not called Esther, the holiday is called Purim, and we realize that God's hand was underneath it all in the end of the day. God's hand is in the hearts of kings, that it's really God who moves the story along and who serves the purpose of helping the king understand what's exactly going on. Now, Esther was the vehicle for that, but it's not necessarily the case. Jews in Germany pre the Holocaust were so comfortable in Germany, partially because they were like, we are a part of every part of society. We're bankers and we're in the government and we're governors and we're whatever else that they were. And they were therefore so comfortable. And unfortunately, the Holocaust came to say, well, it doesn't matter that you're comfortable. It doesn't matter that you've been helping out. It doesn't matter that you were so high in the whatever part of government you were. Is that if you're Jewish, we don't want you. And some people even claimed, like, we didn't even know you were Jew. They were Jewish, and they just got somehow the genealogy, you know, that they found out about it. It's a cautionary tale about relying too much on other people. That you don't want to make, you want to make sure that, yes, it's important to be part of civilian life. It's important to be part of life in general. But when you lose the reliance on God and you say, ah, don't worry about it. I'm so well connected. I don't have to worry. I'm so this. I don't have to worry. In the end of the day, we really have to just be reliant on God. And that is what chapter one is coming to tell us. Chapter one is part of the Jewish story because it tells us what the worry is, and then sets the stage for letting us know that Esther is not the absolute savior of the day, but rather the vehicle to which salvation comes through. I hope that this gives you a little bit of an insight and a little bit of a different take on chapter one. And then if you, again, I encourage you guys to, with this new lens, to read through the story in English and Hebrew and in Persian, whatever language you guys read in, and to deep dive and to see how this mindset changes the narrative of the story. And I hope that it will with this in mind, you'll read the story with a brand new perspective, and really see how chapter one fits into the entire story. With that, I wish you a wonderful day.